Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
Once again, we will continue moving through the Old Testament, so go ahead and grab those Bibles and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Thank you so much for joining us for Defined by Moments. If you have not been following along, so far we have looked at Ecclesiastes chapter 1. We've done an introduction and we have started to dip our toes into the deep waters that Solomon has for us here. The way that I see this book is it is a diary of a dignitary. It is a journal of a journeyman. It is the reflective thoughts of royalty who is looking back over his life and realizes that he has made some significant mistakes. We can almost hear the remorse. We can almost hear the regret in this tone. So as we get to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, I want you to step back and remember your days as a child, where in school you had the annual science fair. You remember those? You had to design that project. You would create your proposal. You would research the topic. You would have some kind of a hypothesis. And then you would begin to test it. Once you had finished the test, you would look at the results. You would draft those results. You would create your conclusions. And then you would have a fancy display and would be standing there as judges came by and asked questions of you. Well, we are almost going to see Solomon do a science project in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Look at verse 1. He says, "I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself." So he's saying, I've got a hypothesis. I'm going to test my heart, my life, with pleasure. If we were going back to the old science fair mentality, his hypothesis would be really written something like this. If I acquire all the treasures, all the trinkets, and all the triumph that I possibly can in life, then I will find happiness, satisfaction, and fulfillment. So he offers the classic if-then as his hypothesis. Now, before he goes through and describes to us how he did his test, what the control group, I guess you would say, looked like, he immediately offers his conclusion in the latter part of verse 1 when he says, "But behold, this also was vanity." In other words, the treasures, the trinkets, and the triumph of life, they do not and they cannot bring happiness, satisfaction, or fulfillment. Now I want to make sure you understand the language here. When he says, "Behold," it is a demonstrative attention-getting device. It would be as if I all of a sudden stood up with an air horn and pushed it. Everybody would jump and would turn and look in that direction. Solomon is saying certainly here. He's going, stop and listen to a truth that I'm about to say. His hypothesis fails, and he continues that in verse 2. He says, "And I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it?" So Solomon continues this by saying that laughter is foolish glory. You know, if you just lightheartedly drift and coast through life, it's nothing. He then goes on and says that, you know, abundant pleasure, it's useless. It doesn't accomplish anything. And it cannot advance you over others. Why? Because all of us face the same thing when the number of our days is over. We all face death. So this is a bleak picture that Solomon is painting here. But I want to make sure that you understand how he explains this method. Because if we need a message for our modern world, this is it. The things that he says he chases, guess what? We find people in our world today that chase the same thing. And that is a problem. So he will go through this, and as we do so, I want to make sure, as you read this, as we go through it together, make note of all the times that he uses the personal pronoun I, me, my, or myself. He is doing none of these things for others. Every single thing is an egotistical, self-centered focus upon him. Does that sound like our world today. So notice what he says in verse 3. I searched my heart, how to cheer my body with wine. My heart still guided me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. So the first thing that he does is he tests his hypothesis with wine. So he consumed it. He put his whole heart into it to see if it would work, if it would lead him to wisdom, if it would lead him to satisfaction and fulfillment. But you know what? He found out it didn't. In fact, you know, the way to foolishness, it's through wine, because life is short under the sun. And if you live your life without your faculties, if you live your life consumed with inebriation, then the few days that we have, they're going to be even less valuable. So think of all the people today that, hey, you know, if I go get that drink of wine, if I go get this beer, if I go have this mixed drink, it's going to make me forget my problems. It's going to make it all better. It doesn't. It just delays the inevitable. And Solomon says right here, he was trying to figure out how this works. But again, if we back up to verse 2, what has he already said? This is vanity. Look at verses 4 through 6. We see not only has he tried wine, but now he turns his attention completely to work. Verse 4 says, I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted them in all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. So Solomon, he didn't build these houses. He didn't build these parks. He didn't build this access to water for his people to make their lives better. No, he did this only for himself. You know, when he talks about how he has built the houses, you can almost imagine him thinking, well, I'm a king. I have multiple houses across this country of mine. But you know what? I need another one. So let me go build it just for me. It's this vanity focus that he has. But what is he doing? Look at the ways that he puts this out there when he says that he does these things. You know, when he talks about the term great works, verse 4, I made great works. What he in essence is saying is, I made things that I could boast about. I made things that exalted me above others. There's never been anything as good as what I've just built. These structures would have made others look at them and go, wow, he is a magnificent king. They would have been highly valued, and it would have promoted him, not his designers, not his workers, but him as a king. So he poured his heart into work. What do we find in our modern day? There are individuals that will spend so much time, so much effort, and put all of it into work. And then when the economy turns bad, or when the company has, you know, a difficult time, what do? That individual that put everything they had into their company, the company's going to let them go just like that. Work does not bring happiness, fulfillment, and joy. Now notice what he does here in verses 7 and 8. He says, I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any other who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women. Well, let's stop right here. So we've looked at wine. We've looked at how Solomon pursued work. Now he is wealthy. He is trusting in that wealth to give him satisfaction. If you look at all the things that he has listed here, from silver, from gold, herds, flocks, all of these things are what you would see of a king. He even mentions that he purchased slaves and he had slaves born in his house, which meant he had this for an enduring time. Again, this is not, we're not going to get into a debate of slavery or not. Is the Bible saying that slavery here is okay? Clearly it is not. But Solomon is saying, I have tested all the trappings that individuals would have that would show that they have wealth. That's what he's doing. He's using this as a lens to reflect upon the wealth and the status that he has. And ultimately, again, in verse 2, what does he say? It's vanity. But he says he has more than any other king. He collected taxes. He collected tribute from other kings because of who he was. He had trained singers that at the snap of his finger they would break into a chorus. He had everything that anyone could ever want. And yet, he still says, all is vanity. Notice the last line of verse 8. We stopped for a very specific reason. He says, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of men. Solomon said that he tried women. Now this phrase here about the delight of the sons of men, it means that they were the most beautiful. They were the desire of others. This would not be Solomon with his new wife, and people are like, ooh, why did he marry her? It would be like, wow, he got her? It's those kinds of conversations. But think about our world today. We want to invest and pour our heart and our soul into relationships. And what does it do? Does it bring satisfaction? No. Because often people that are chasing the relationships, especially the way that Solomon did, there's no long-term commitment. It's all self-focused. It's all me. And when I'm done or when I no longer have the thrill, I move on. Grab your Bibles and flip over to 1 Kings chapter 11. Now, I'm just going to read through some of this, and I want you to listen to what we have recorded here of Solomon with his chasing of these relationships. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 1 reads, now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. So not only is Solomon really should only have one wife, but now he's got a whole lot more, but he has married from nations where God has told him not to. You know, really, God laid it out that this is going to turn your heart away from me, Solomon. But it's also Solomon is doing this to build these alliances with other places so that he doesn't have to depend upon God. He can depend upon himself for his security. We get to verse 3. He had 700 wives who were princesses and 300 concubines, and his wife turned his heart away. For when Solomon is old, his wives turned his heart to other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. So just as God told Solomon, don't do this because they'll turn your hearts, he didn't care. He tested it, he pursued it. Now remember, this is someone who is considered to be the wisest man of all. And yet, he chased these illicit relationships, and they didn't bring satisfaction. This aspect of how his heart clung to these women, it's not just that, they're a possession, but his heart clung to them. He held on to, he pursued, and he captured, and he held on to. So this is something that he did willingly. But what kind of image does this present? Is this someone that you would want to marry? You're just one of a bunch of relationships? No. He is the, for lack of a better phrase, smooth operator. The one that could say the right things, that could charm anyone. He had the wealth. Everybody would want to be with him. Why? Because look at all that he has. And then once he gets you, he's going to hold on to you, but really there is someone else that he is going to go after. Solomon says, this is vanity. Look at verse 9. Solomon continues, so I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. So we've got wine, work, wealth, women. Now we see he's got wisdom. Of all the things that led to his fame, it says he kept his wisdom. You know, you think about his proverbs. You think about the lectures. There were rulers from across the world that would sit at his feet and listen to him lecture on things like agriculture, botany, whatever. He was the expert of experts. it says that he added more to himself than any other. But here, he says, I'm wise, yet everything that we've just talked about would call into question whether he was really wise. But by this statement, I surpassed all who were before me. We see it a hubris, a pride that is exponential that shows. He goes, I am the greatest. Well, someone that really lays that out on the line, are they truly living from wisdom? But Solomon's not done. We've gone through wine, work, wealth, women, his supposed wisdom, and now we get to the last one in verse 10. He says, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, that this was my reward for all my toil. So what am I saying here? These are his wishes. In other words, if he saw it and he wanted it, he got it. If he couldn't get it, he would take it. He's the king. He's the most powerful man in the kingdom. You know, it's interesting that he says he worked for these things. No, Solomon as the king didn't work for anything. He had people that did that for him. But he said he spared nothing. Now, I wanted you to stop and I want you to think about this. What did you get for Christmas? At the last Christmas that you had. Do you remember what you got? Well, let me ask you this. Do you use whatever you receive for Christmas every single day? The answer to that for all of us is no, which means we didn't really have to have it. We wanted it. And just like Solomon, the glittering, the newness, it faded. So Solomon has tried wine, work, wealth, women, wisdom, and wishes. And what was the conclusion of his scientific experiment? Look at verse 11. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, here's the phrase, all was vanity. Not some of it, not parts of it, not that one thing, all of it was vanity. And a striving after the wind. So not only is it futile, not only does it wither, but this striving after the wind, it slips through your fingers. It's not nourishing to your soul. It's always having to be replaced. And then he concludes by saying, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So picture a cup, a red Solo cup, for lack of a better phrase, that you have drilled a hole in the bottom and you pour liquid into it. What's going to happen? It's going to seep right out the bottom. And then you're going to pour more in. What's going to happen? It's going to drain. Then you pour more in. And what's going to happen? It's going to drain again. That is what Solomon is saying here, that there is nothing to be gained. Here's the key phrase. We've talked about this before, under the sun. If you only live for this life and don't put your eyes on eternity, you're living under the sun. And Solomon is saying you're just like the example of that cup. It is always nothing to be gained. You're not getting anywhere. You're pouring in and it's just seeping away. So Solomon, who is considered the wisest man and the wealthiest man of his day, failed. He says it's all worthless if you live under the sun. So what can we in our modern day learn from his example? I think there are three lessons. Number one, temporary fixes do not solve permanent problems. The temporary fix, any of these things that he said that he tried, wine, wealth, wishes, none of it solves the problem of satisfaction, the longing that we have in our heart. That can only come from God, because we'll see when we get to Ecclesiastes chapter 3 that Solomon tells us that God has placed eternity in our hearts. There's a longing in our soul that only the Creator can fulfill. None of these things in creation can. So number one, temporary fixes do not solve permanent problems. Number two, anything without God is empty. I want to say that again. Anything without God is empty. You know, you think about the mathematical equation in multiplication that's so simple. 1 times 0 equals what? 0. So any number times 0 is nothing. It doesn't matter if that number is 5, if that number is 10, or if that number is 1,673,494. All of that times 0 is 0. You can pursue wine. You can pursue wealth. You can chase after relationships. You can spare no expense in your life. But if you don't have God, it's empty. It's worthless. So number one, temporary fixes do not solve permanent problems. Number two, anything without God is empty. And number three, if it does not change you, then you do not believe its truth. Let me say that again, because this is important. If it does not change you, then you do not believe it to be truth. Solomon claimed to be wise. Solomon knew more than anyone else. He had a relationship with God. God granted him these things, but he didn't live like it. He didn't believe it. He didn't view it as truth. Because had he believed it was truth, it would have changed how he lived. Go back to 1 Kings chapter 11. God said, don't marry these foreign women because they're going to turn your hearts from me. Solomon knew that. Solomon was wise. But what did he do? He married these other women and they turned his heart away from God. If you continue reading, you will see that he built altars to these false gods, some of whom that you would place a newborn baby into these burning hands as an offering. It's despicable what he did. Why? Because he didn't believe it was truth. If he valued it as truth, it would have changed his life. My friends, what Solomon has laid out for us in his science experiment, he says it's all vanity. Everything under the sun is vanity. If you believe that to be true, then it should change your life. Finally, let's hit these last two things one more time and we'll wrap up. Temporary fixes do not solve permanent problems. And anything without God is empty. Thank you for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing that how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back with us in the not-too-distant future, and you take care.